Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Gimel. How do you like that? We're already deep into this Masechet. Okay, so let me just remind you of the exciting things that we discovered yesterday, especially those who were caught in the middle of Shabbos and weren't able to listen in, but I'm sure they will make up that first daf since it's so important in the course of today. Bezrat Hashem. So what we discovered was a Mishnah that has three opaque variables, and we're trying to figure out what the heck they're all about. The first was the word hakol, which is obviously a ribui. What is it being marbe that we would have thought perhaps could not do shkita? The second was the shkitatan kshera, because it can't mean the same thing as the hakol, because obviously if you can shech, the shkita is kosher. We're not telling you you can shech for dog food. So the question is, what were the limited circumstances where only in a pinch was the shkita kosher? What was that referring to, as opposed to the first hakol, which was straight out, just go ahead and shech? And then the third opaque variable was, after telling us the special din of cheresh shoteh v'katan, that is only going to be kosher in the event that it was observed by someone else, to make sure that there was no problem in the shkita of the psulei shkita that would be undetectable by us ex post facto. I mean, we have no way of knowing whether maybe the person, the child, stopped in the middle of the shkita for a moment, and that way he posseled it, even though at the end it looks the same as any other. We don't know whether the ratio of downward force, which would be a slicing called drisa, to the horizontal force, which is the normal weight to shecht, whether it was too high, and that would be a psul of drisa. There'd be no way we could detect that. And there would be no way either of knowing whether the knife had initially been hidden at the time of the shkita, perhaps under the skin. We'll see later on, maybe even under a piece of beged, whether that might even be called also our special psul of chalada. In any event, that would need to be seen. And therefore, that's all very nice. But after introducing that, we end up with another opaque variable, which is v'chulam. Gavi, do yourself a favor and listen to the daf of yesterday, even if you did it before. And that would be the v'chulam. What's the v'chulam? Well, it's got to be referring to something that was there before, but the problem is everything that was there before did not need an observer. So how could we possibly be talking about needing an observer when we just said you don't need an observer? Those were our three questions. So where Gemara is going to attempt to answer those three questions in multiple ways, we had our first answer yesterday, which was given by Rabba Bar Ula. Now, Rabba Bar Ula's answer was actually brilliant, because what Rabba Bar Ula did was he pointed out, essentially between the lines, that the end of the Kachim sugyas of Zvachim and Achas require a transition into Chulin. And obviously, Shchita itself is a profound transition, because it's one thing that's found both in Kachim and in Chulin. But what he did, Rabba Bar Ula, was something brilliant. He introduced into the Mishnah, which is the Mishnah of transition, a deeper transition that forces us to contemplate the real place of the Mokum of the Dinim of Shkita. Is it a Kachim Sugya or is it a Chulin Sugya? And the way that he did that was really so brilliant, it boggles the mind, is that he introduced the issue of Hakol in the Mishnah as being the problem of whether Chulin, that was done with a kavana to be treated like Kodesh, does it get the dinim of Kodesh? And then the question is, if it does, what would be the halacha of shchita if you're tamei, which is what? I thought that was all a zvachim sugya. So it was. And suddenly the zvachim sugya is translated into chulin. And that led to the discussion yesterday of where is the main sugya? Is it in zvachim or is it in chulin? Anyway, that was quite brilliant. So what he did was, he said that the Hakol, which was the Chatchila, that was Tomei, with Chulin Shenazu al Taras HaKedesh, which you could think you're still in the middle of Zvachim over here, and he was using a Sakin Aruka, which also was smack bang in the middle of Zvachim, and that was the Chatchila. And the Bidi Avad was, well, if it was real Kachim, then you'd have to be certain that there was no Negia. And then the Vechulam was referring to a case that required an outside observer because we didn't have the information of the person himself who could tell us 100% whether there was or was not a Negia. So he handled all three of those strange variables in the Mishnah. And in doing so at the same time, he raised the sugya of where exactly the shechita belong. Is the main sugya a chulin sugya, or is the main sugya a zvachim kachim sugya? And you'll note that, of course, in the Gemara, the two mesechtas have the same name. Chulin is called shechitat chulin in the Gemara, and zvachim is called shechitas kachim in the Gemara. So that's further indication that he hit it right on the nose, Rabbi Barula. Anyway, before we go on to discuss the alternative approaches, which we're going to have today, some alternative approaches that are really not very good approaches. And the reason that they're not good approaches is that they only address two out of the three variables, which teaches us that sometimes something is better than nothing. Meaning that just because you have something that doesn't completely cover what it is that you're learning, that doesn't mean that two out of three is not an actual additional issue in the Mishnah, which means that the Mishnah does not have to necessarily be holistic. It can be teaching you a Chiddush separately in each element. This used to drive me crazy. My grandfather, Zatzal, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael. I've told you this before, but I'm telling you, as a kid, I was absolutely driven nuts by this. So he would always corner people if he met them walking, you know, in the hall of the yeshiva or down the street. And that's why when they saw him, they ran the other way. But sometimes they couldn't get away in time. And anyway, so he would corner them, asking them questions about the Gemara to see how well they understood it, or just asking them random questions. And oftentimes they would give him answers which were just outrageously stupid because they could not fit the sugya at all, right? And he would say, oh, good, good, sehr gut. And when they walked away, I would say to him, how can you lie like that? How can you tell them it's good, good, when it doesn't answer anything correctly because it leaves out this and that and so on? And he would tell me, and I never understood it until much later, 40 years it takes to get to the bottom, but I never understood what he meant. And he would say, it doesn't explain anything here, but it's still a good sfara for elsewhere. but you were asking here. Well, the same thing is true about a Mishnah. If a Mishnah gives you three variables, it doesn't mean that you have to understand that the Mishnah is addressing all three. The Mishnah may be allowing you to look at one opaque variable, two opaque variables, and best of all, three opaque variables. But it doesn't mean that the ones that can't explain everything are not usable. And that's an extremely important insight. And that's why the Gemara today is going to explore alternatives that aren't really good alternatives, because we know up front that they cannot explain all three variables. They only explain two out of three. So I think that's an important lesson. Anyway. So let's move on back to today's sugya. So the Gemara, before proceeding to the alternatives to Rabbi Barula, wants to make sure that we understand the case, because Rabbi Barula said that the case is talking about that you've got a long knife and you can avoid coming into contact with the animal that you're shechting, which, by the way, you have to ask yourself, why is it necessary to distance yourself from the animal that you're shechting? As Tosis points out, there's two reasons why that should not be an issue. A, immediately after shechita, the animal is not dead. After shechita, you still have the pirchus. There's still plenty of muscular movement that is considered under certain circumstances. Later on, we're going to see what type of pirchus is considered to be signs of remaining life and what type of pirchus is merely chemical stimulation of muscles. But we'll see about electrochemical, I should say. And that's something the Gemara will discuss later. But certainly immediately after Shechita, even if you would come in contact with the animal, isn't it still alive? And Tosfos is mechadesh that the animal may still be alive, but not necessarily vis-a-vis the dinim of tuma. Because remember, tuma is a function of achilas adam. If something is alive, generally we say that it cannot be mekabel tuma. That's true, but that's because it's not food. But immediately after shechita, something is considered to be food because it's now kosher to eat. And therefore, the din of pirchus being a sign of life may be true for things such as ha'amada v'haracha, where the animal has to be put in the front of the kohen in order for a person to be able to be paid at it. But that doesn't mean it's considered to be alive as something which will not be mekabel tuma. So that's your first possibility. Next question. Why would you have to stay away from the animal? Where was the hechsher of the animal? Remember that nothing is mekabel tuma of a foodstuff unless it was mukhsher lekabel before. So you'll say, well, the hechsher is the actual blood of the shechita. Right? And blood is one of the Shiva Mashkin. Yes, but the problem is when it comes to kachim, we have a klal that dam is a gavi klal, dam kodashim eno machshir. So if that's the case, why are we bringing up the im shachatu as referring to the shechita of a behemah's kodesh? It wouldn't be a problem. Even if he did touch it, it wouldn't be mekabel tuma. And the obvious answer in this case is, as you well know, Chibata Kodesh. So Chibata Kodesh would have made it the equivalent of a foodstuff. Just bringing that up to make it clear that we've got our other bases handled. But there's one base that we haven't handled. And that is, if you're shechting with a long knife, why didn't the knife itself be mekabel tuma? And if the knife was mekabel tuma from the Adam who was tame, then it would have been mitame the basar, and it wouldn't have helped you to use a long knife. How about that problem? Now, before we talk about that problem, let's remember there are two levels to that problem. We have the concept of bachalal cherev. Bachalal cherev means that if you have a metallic kli, then that kli is mekabel tuma without attenuation when it comes to tumas meis. So normally you'll go from an ava tuma to a rishon letuma to a sheni letuma. When it comes to halal cherev, where you would start with the mace itself, avi avot, then the person who touches the mace is an avatuma, and then he touches something else, and that becomes only a rishon letuma. That is not true on metallic kelim, because b'halal cherev tells us that the cherev that was used to kill the halal is part of the halal, and therefore there's no attenuation, in which case touching the sword that itself touched the mate is the equivalent of touching the mate while it's still in that mate. And that therefore, it depends, there's different than a bechibur and so on. But as far as we're concerned, a halal cherev would mean that if the person who touched that cherev, in this case the shochet, was tame mate, then the knife would also be tame mate, would not attenuate, and it would be metame the basar, and that basar would become a rishon. Now, we don't need that in order to ask the question that we're about to ask, because even if we hadn't had the din of bechal al cherev, the knife would still have become a rishon, and a rishon can be metame basar to be a sheni. So what we're doing is we're jazzing up our question, okay? So we want to ask the maximal question. But you don't need Bechal al Cherev to ask this question. So therefore, asks the Gemara, Hi, Tameh, we're talking about a case of a Tameh who is going to be shechting with a long knife. Can you tell me what type of tuma he had? I mean, Ilei Medeit may be mate, if he was a Tameh mate, so then doesn't the Torah say Bechal al Cherev, Omer Rachmana, which teaches us that the Cherev harehu kechalal, that any time that you have a metallic kli, it doesn't attenuate to tuma, and therefore it would be, if it touched the mate, it would be aviavota tuma. If it touches the av, it would become an avatuma. And therefore, why isn't the person who touches the knife, why isn't he letami lesakin? Let him be mitami the sakin, and then the sakin goes, viozo sakin, and it's mitami the basar anyways. So what was the case when we said you can use a long knife? Well, obviously, it could not have been a case where the Adam was tummy to masmeis. It must be a case where he was tummy to masheretz. So that would be one way of addressing the problem. But the other way we could say is maybe he didn't use a knife. After all, and this gets us into immediately another concept of shechita, everybody thinks naively that you can only do shechita with a knife. Well, that's not true. You could do shechita with anything, as we're going to see later on, as long as it doesn't have any pegimot, which we talked about yesterday when the Tosfos asked and pointed out that there could be also a problem in the shechita of these psulim if the knife itself wasn't checked. And that would be, it would be performing an akira on the little piece that gets caught in the notch on the knife. So as long as it's smooth, maybe the man was actually tummy mace, but he didn't use a knife. Maybe he used a reed, you know? I mean, how many times have you gotten a paper cut? The paper cut, I mean, thank heavens it wasn't straight through your neck, but you can imagine that paper cuts are just as smooth, if not smoother, than knife cuts, and therefore you could actually do shechita with a piece of paper, as long as it didn't have any kind of notches in it. And therefore, the Tanya, Bakol Shochatim, we're going to see in the Mishnah that you can actually shecht with anything at all. It doesn't matter whether it's a stone that's sharpened, it's a piece of glass that's sharpened, it's a krumit shalkona, it's a sharpened reed, it's all the same. Bein bitzur, bein bitzchuchit, bein bikrumit shalkona. So we've got a number of possibilities of how we could be talking about a tame and a behema, which was needed to be cared for b'chulin because it was chulin shenas v'altaras hakedash, and that was our first approach. Let's take our second approach, Abaya's approach. Abaya says, well, we could also say that the Mishnah, when it said Hakol Shochatim, that would mean even a kuti. Now, in this case, a kuti actually means a kuti. And what's special about the kutim, remember that ultimately we made a gezera in which the kutim were turned into goyim kechol dover. We have to treat them like Akum, because we found they were worshiping Avodah Zarah and so on. But we're not talking about this. We're talking about the Mishnah. And the Mishnah was before that Gezerah was made. And therefore, if it's talking about a Kuti, the thing that that needs to be addressed is whether the Gerut of the Kutim was a true Gerut or not. Because they only were Mitgayer because they were being attacked by Ari. Oh, Ari. Oh, huh. Well, well, well. What's the matter? Sunroof isn't open, Dari? So they were Gerei Arayot, so they were Gerim. It's pretty scary. You meet Ari in a dark alley. Let me tell you something. But if they only became Gerim because they were being attacked by lions, so then is that considered to be a real Gerut? Were they subsequently, were they really Mizgayer? And so on and so forth. We got all those kind of issues. So we're assuming over here they are real Gerim. Their Shechita would be kosher. But there's only one problem. Remember that the Kutim don't believe in the certain things that the Chachamim say. The klal with the Kutim is that there is no klal. As in all crazy groups, it's basically random. Whatever you feel like believing in, you believe in. Whatever you don't feel like believing in, you don't believe in. So this was the first conservative Judaism in which, you know, you always have an explanation for whatever you're doing. But when we examine it more closely, it's just random. So whatever I'm comfortable with. So that's the way that we paskin about the Kutim. As we're going to see later, the klal with the Kutim, which will become a gavi klal when we actually get to the Gemara, the klal with the Kutim is kol mitzvah sheichziku bo kutim harbe medaktikim bo yoter miyisrael. They're even more frum than the best of anybody else. But that's because obviously it's their own thing. It's easy to be frum with your own thing. So anything that they do happen to be keeping as a mitzvah, it's a super duper reliable mitzvah. So they're very careful about shechita, so we should have no problem. Aha, but there's another little problem. Do they have an issue with feeding you a nevela? No. Well, why not? Doesn't it say Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol? That's the way the rabbis understand Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol. The real meaning of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol is obviously not to put a brick in front of Mr. Magoo. And therefore, the question of giving somebody tarfus, that's not an issue. So even though it's completely kosher, maybe, but if it wouldn't be kosher, how would you know? They wouldn't tell you. They don't
care. How many people here know who Mr. Magoo is?
I was thinking that. Not too many, I'm afraid. Oh, well. There's always the problem of dating in these things. Anyway.
But it was a vivid image, Rebbe. It was.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know, Mr. Magoo.
Okay, great. Your beard attests to that. Let me tell you, Mordecai. Okay, so now, if that's the case, if a kuti shechts, so then, is it kosher or not? So the Hakol Shochtim is saying, a kuti can shecht. And if the kuti shechts, it's perfectly kosher shechita. Now, what about the question about whether you can eat that shechita? See, it's a brilliant idea that Abaye has got. There could be a kosher, completely kosher shechita, but then the shaila is it a shechita that you can eat from? That's the point. So the Mishnah is saying, see what a chap? Hakol shochtim. Yes, they can all do shechita and it's a kosher shechita. Now, can you assume shechita from chera? Oh no, that's a different issue. So if the kuti went ahead and shechted, and now you want to know whether shechitas on kshera, there's a simple test. The test is give him a piece of the meat and see if he eats it. If he eats it, then you know that it's kosher. But if he refuses to eat it, something's very suspicious, and therefore you can't eat it. So that would be the difference between the hakol shochtin and the shechitas on kshera. It's really, really that's just about the only way that you could come up with a completely kosher shechita that nonetheless maybe you can't eat. So that's how he's explaining the Mishnah, which I think is really brilliant. So hakol shochatim afilu kuti, but can you eat it? Well, b'med varim amurim kishi Yisrael oned al gabav. So now the question is, do we know for a fact that it was a kosher shechita, not just because he says so? If there was somebody that was a mashgiach and was there and can see everything that he did, then you can eat it. But if the mashgiach is only a yotzei v'nichnas, he's walking in and out, you know, then you can't have him shecht. But if he does shecht, somebody is not muted here. If he does shecht, there's always a test. And what's that test? It would be usher to eat from his shechita, unless you would be chotech kezayit basar, cut off a kezayit, give him the piece to eat. If he eats it, then you can eat the rest of it. Mutar lechol mishchitato. If he refuses to eat it, then it's asur lechol mishchitato. Continues the Mishnah, chutz micheresh hayta mekatan, of course, because afil diavad namilo, over there, you can't eat it even b'di avad. You shouldn't give him the shechita because you don't know. Shema Yeshur, Shema Yidrasur, Shema Yachalita. And then kulam sheshachtu v'acherim omdim al gamam. If somebody was there and saw every last thing that they did, so then it would be kosher. So now, here's the big problem. That is our third variable, and Abaye can't answer the third variable. And that really messes up his explanation of the Mishnah. The third variable is v'chulam. V'chulam sheshachatu v'acherim oimdim al gabam, and so on. So that would all be kosher. Now, what's that referring to? Is that referring to the cheresheit v'katan? Well, ilema cheresheit v'katan alokoi. Remember that the word alokoi has two different explanations, one according to Rashi and one according to Tosfos. According to Rashi, alokoi is not Allah, but rather his girsa the Gemara was de alokoi, which is what we're discussing. Then why the heck would we say v'chulam? This is what we're discussing. According to Tosfos, the meaning is Allah alone. This is the only thing that is being referred to? Fine. Anyway, the question is, why wouldn't it have said im? Why would it have said kulam? The im shachatu mi boile. Is it going on the opening case? Ela akuti. You can't tell me that if somebody saw them, then it's kosher. Because you said, Kis Yisrael Omid Agabav, he could be Shochet Afilu Lechatchila. Because you said, Bameh Dvarim Amurim Kis Yisrael Omid Agabav. So here you're telling me, if somebody's watching him, he can Shech Lechatchila. And then you're telling me, if somebody watched him, he Shechted B'diavad. That's crazy. So how do you explain the Fechulan? Kasha, I can't explain the Vichulan. So this basically pushes Abaye out of the running in terms of a preferred explanation of the Mishnah. But as I said before, it doesn't mean that it's not also an approach to those variables in the Mishnah. So let's take another approach. The other approach is an attack on Abaye by Rava. Now, we're going to see that just because Rava attacks Abaye's approach doesn't mean that Rava has this particular approach in mind and just needs a variable to answer it. But we'll talk about that later. First, it appears that Rava is attacking Abaye and offering his own approach. Omar Rava, excuse me, sir. You're saying that Yisro Yotze V'Nichnas is not enough? Man, oh man, what are you going to shut down 99% of the restaurants in Israel? I mean, everybody's got a Yotze V'Nichnas, and they say, I never see a Mashgiach here. Oh, the Mashgiach, he comes in and out. You know, when does he come in and out? Ah, you can't know when he comes in and out, because if you knew, then he wouldn't be coming in and out, because then it wouldn't be random, and then you wouldn't be afraid, and therefore you'll never see the Mashgiach. It's sort of a built-in problem. But anyway. Taina's Rava. If the Mashgiach is coming in and out, why wouldn't that be enough? The Yotze V'Nichnas L'Chatchila is not good enough? Well, what about the Mishnah? Hameniach Oved Kochavim B'Chanuto. You've got this store with wine in it, and you leave a goy in the store, you walk out for a moment, but Yisrael is being Yotze V'Nichnas, Jews are coming in and out. So then there's no problem. And the wine in the store does not become usher. So isn't that enough? Says Abaye, can you read? It doesn't say you're allowed to walk out. It says, Haminiach, if you did walk out. So that's exactly what we're not talking about. Remember, we're talking about a case in which you're telling me, Lechatchila. Well, it doesn't say over here you could do Lechatchila. So what's your problem? All right, says Rava, how about this? What are you going to do about that? It says, Beferish, that a shomer of wine does not have to be sitting there the whole time looking at the wine. If he's Yotze V'Nichnas, that's enough to keep the wine kosher and not to suspect that the goy had access to the wine. So why did you say, Abaye, that by the case of the Shechita is not good enough for the Yisrael B'Yotze V'Nichnas? I would say, says Rava, if you're going to insist that this is the approach you want to take, then at least make it consistent with the halacha and say as follows, Hakol shochatim afilu kuti. Bamed varim amurim kishi Yisrael Yotze V'Nichnas. You have to change that. No? Don't say Bamed varim amurim kishi Yisrael omid agabav. It's good enough for the Yisrael to be walking in and out. But suppose nobody was there at all, and you walk in and you find that he shechted. Okay, this is the kuti. So now you could continue with your approach. Then you cut a kezayis basar, you give it to him. If he eats it, it's mutar lechol b'shchitato. If he refuses to eat it, it's a sign that his shchita wasn't kosher. That's asur lechol b'shchitato. Chutz b'cherashot v'katan, where afilu b'diavad nami, we can't rely on this. Shema yishu, shema yidrusu, shema yachalidu. Ah, but wait a minute. We got the same problem we had before. What about the third variable of v'chulan sheshachatu, which was it referring to? Is it referring to the very case that we're dealing with, the Cherishot of a cotton, which we just discussed, Halakoi? Then why would it say Vichulan Sheshachatu, which is obviously introducing something besides the Cherishot of a cotton? It should just say, but if they did, it should say Vim Shachatu, if they did it, people were watching them. That's what it should say. Do you think it's referring back to the case of the Kuti? Didn't you say you don't need someone to be standing on top of him? Somebody could just be walking in and out of the room, and he could check even lechatchila. So how do you explain the v'chulam? Kasha, I cannot explain the v'chulam. Okay, so now we've got two additional approaches besides Rabbi Barula, and one is Abaya's approach, and one is Rava's tikkun of Abaya's approach, right? And now we've got a third approach that also doesn't explain all three variables. Let's try Ravashi. Ravashi says, I explain the Mishnah like this. Hakol shochatim, even if this guy is not religious. Afil Yisrael mumer. He can still shecht. Mumer lamai? But what do I mean that he's a mumer? I mean that, look, the guy basically keeps kashrus, but not when he goes out, you know. I mean, when he goes out and there's no other restaurant available and there's no other food that's edible on the airline except for that nice treif of food, he'll eat the treif of food. But, you know, if he's got an option, he'll eat kosher food. So that's called a mumer l'teavon. If he's hungry and he desires something, then he's not going to be able to not eat the treif of food. So such a person, since he prefers kosher food and he eats kosher food when he can, then if he shechts, it would be a kosher shechita. Of course, it would only be on condition that it doesn't cause him any additional trouble. I mean, you don't expect him to sit there sharpening the shechita knife and checking the shechita knife and spending a half an hour. Oh, come on, man. So he'll just take his pocket knife and check, you know. That's not going to be a good shechita. So what I mean when I say afilu Yisrael mumer, it would only be like Rava said. Rava said a Yisrael mumer, who is ochel nevelot teavon, if you check the knife, you're bodek the sakin, and you give him that sakin, he can check, and you'd be allowed to eat from his shrita, mutala chomishrita to. Avaloba dak v'natano, if you didn't check the knife out yourself and gave him that knife to shecht with, you can't allow him to shecht. But what if he did? Now, what do you do now? Well, take the knife that he shechted with and check it now. If the knife is in good shape, nimtza sakino yafa, you see that he's got a perfectly smooth shechita knife, so then you can eat the shechita, because why would he do it wrong if he could do it right? He prefers to eat kosher food. But if the knife is not in good shape now, it's osur lachol mishchitato. And continues the Mishnah, this, however, is not applicable to a cheresh to the katan, because over there, no matter what, you wouldn't be able to eat, because we don't rely on people who are not b'nei de'ah, so they don't have da'at, and therefore, even though they know the rules, and they know how to do it, and they have a perfect knife, and so on, it doesn't make any difference, because there's a disconnect there in the child that doesn't allow a full application of das, and because of that, anything could have happened. And because of that, it would be Shema Yeshu, Shema Yidrasu, Shema Yachalidu. Ah, but Ravashi, we have the same problem we had with Abaya Varava. What is V'chulam Shachatu? What is this variable of V'chulam? Which case is it referring to? Certainly not directly to the above-mentioned case of Chereshet V'katan. You know, Chereshet V'katan Alokoi? Or according to Rashi, de alokoi, which we've been talking about anyway, the imer shachatu miboyleis. And then it should have simply said, but if they did shecht. Instead it says, but all of the above would include the Yisrael mumer. So I don't get it. Didn't you say that if you were bodek the sakin, you could shecht even lechatchila? And if you weren't bodek the sakin, well, be bodek it now. What do you mean if somebody saw? Idi ite lesakin, leave the gehashta. But if the sakin is no longer here, what good is it if acherim roin otam? So you couldn't possibly know that the shechita was good if you can't check the knife. So the acherim roin otam cannot be referring not to the case of the kulam shachatim, of the Yisrael mumer, and it could not be referring to the case of the chereshet v'katan, because then it should have said ve'im. So what is it referring to? Because even if other people would have seen it, how do you know what the sakin? Maybe the Dilma Basakin Paguma Shachin. Yeah. Okay, Kasha. So that means we've got Abaye, Rava, and Ravashi, who all have attempted to explain the Mishnah and get stuck on the last piece. And obviously, as I mentioned earlier, they knew that they were stuck on the last piece. And the question is, so why bother? Because, again, as the Rosh Hashiva would say, it may not be the right explanation for this, but it's the right explanation for something. So we want to know what that right explanation is. Ravina says, I've got another explanation. I think we can read it like this. Hakol shochatim simply means that if you walk into a shlachthais, and this guy is the shochet, so, you know, I mean, that's the shochet in town. So he's the mumcha, and therefore you're allowed to bring your animal to have him shecht. And when I say that he's the mumcha, it could mean that it's the first time that he's come to town, you know? I mean, I haven't watched him shecht before. We have no idea that he does a good job. But, I mean, he's the guy that's driving in with his truck that has, you know, Reb Alter's kosher shechita shlachtos on wheels. And he comes into town, and now I'm allowed to go to this guy. But, I mean, I do at least have to find out for sure that Bamedvar Mamurim Shiod Inbo Shiodea Lomari Chotshlita. I mean, we've got to give the guy a little bechina. Okay, tell me what the five problems are with Shchita. I mean, if he can't answer that question, I mean, how can you eat from his Shchita? So the only time that you can eat from his Shchita, or bring him Lechatchila his Shchita, I should say, is Shiod Inbo Shiodea Lomari Chotshlita. But suppose you don't know that. So then don't give him your animal to shecht. But what if he shechted and you didn't realize, hey, you know, I never saw this guy's smicha for shechita. Where is his ksav shechita? So im shachat. So then you go back to the guy and you say, listen, buddy, I mean, it's a nice sign on your truck, but how do we know that you're really a shechet? Tell me some dinim of shechita. You give him a bechina. Bot gimoto. Fine. So then it's mutilachom shchita. But if he doesn't pass your test, you can't eat from his shchita. But a shcheres shota v'katan, none of this would be good enough for. Afilo diavad namilo, it wouldn't help for him to be in the best of positions because he doesn't have das. And since he doesn't have das, so shema yishu, shema yidrasu, shema yachalida. Okay, Ravina, so how do you explain the Vekulam Shushachato? Again, it can't be referring specifically to the Cheresh Shaita Vekatan, can it? Ile Mecheresh Shaita Vekatan Alokoi, Ve'im Shachato Miboile. So what is it referring to? To the opening case where somebody is not a mumcha? So then you said we can check him out afterwards, give him a bechina. Why do we need a Cherem Roimoto? So Bibot Kimoto Sage. That, says Ravina, I can explain. If the guy drove out of town before the Rav got here to give him a bechina, so he's not here. So what can we do? Do we have to declare that the animal is a treifa and you can't eat it? What do we do? So the din is, if you can find people that actually saw him and they can testify to the fact that there were none of these problems of the shehiya and so on, so then it would be kosher. So it has an explanation of v'chulan. That's one approach. Now there's an alternative to Ravina, which is Ravina the second. Because remember, there are two issues when it comes to the problem of shchita. Issue number one is, do you know the dinim? So that's the question, are you a mumcha? In order to be a mumcha, you have to pass a bechina and know the dinim of shchita. But even if you passed a bechina, how do we know that you can translate that knowledge into a correct shchita? Remember, I mean, shchita is a physical process that requires you to have a certain level of expertise in two issues, in how you'll move your hands, and you have to have the necessary skill, and in another issue, which is, will you possibly feel faint? Now, if you have a tendency to faint at the sight of blood or to feel faint when you're doing an operation of some kind, you're not a very good surgeon for me to hire. And because, look, when it comes to shchita, even a momentary lapse is going to cause a shahiyah, right? So we got a problem because it's sometimes when a person feels faint, then they don't even realize that they've stopped moving for a moment, caused a shahiyah. So that is something that might be an alternative approach. To be able and to know, we should know that you are a good shartet, maybe the bechina isn't enough. Maybe what we need is actually some tests and to make sure that you've shechted a number of times in front of us and we see you do a proper job and so on. So that's the second ravina. The ravina didn't say you need to pass a test. Why? Well, we'll see later on. There's a concept of most people who run around driving a truck that says Revalter's Shchita Hoyz on wheels. Most people like that actually have taken the trouble to learn the halachas, if only because they're nervous somebody might ask them something, you know? So therefore, we have a klal which is about to become a gavri klal, and that is rov mitzuyim etzor shchita are mumchi. Most people that actually are going to be running around like that, they have certainly taken care to be able to pass a test. So that's not the issue. The issue is muhzakim or not. So have we seen them do shchita actually, not just know about shchita? So this would be ravina the second. And this is ravina the second. Ikini amri, ravina amar hokikatani. Hakol shochatin. Anyone can shecht as long as they are muhzak. So Rav Alter's portable shlachtos on wheels. Again, you go over there, look, the guy looks like he's the real thing, and he's wearing a long black coat, you know, under his apron, and this guy must be serious. So I'm assuming he's a real shaykhet. But wait, that's only if, in fact, this person is muhzak. So that's the chiddush here. Muhzakin, in the chiddush of the Mishnah, is they don't have to be mumchin for you to pass the... When we say Alpha Pishain Mumchim, we don't know. It doesn't mean he isn't a Mumchim. Of course, it means we can assume he's a Mumchim. But that is not enough, because Babet Varimumurim Sheshachatu Lefanenu Shnayim V'Shalosh Pa'amim V'lo Nitaleif. This is only if he shechted and he didn't get faint. Avalo Shechat Lefanenu Shnayim V'Shalosh Pa'amim Lo Yishchot, because we're worried, maybe Yitaleif. But, okay, so that's the Im shachat. What's the kulam shachatu? What's the second part of the hakol shochtim? That's if he really is a actual muhzak. That's the assumption. And then muter lechol mishchitasan. That's talking about shchitatan kshira. If you can actually have him pass and be a mumcha, namely that we actually saw, and be a muhzak, that we actually saw him shecht. What about if he did shecht? Im shachat, so why does it say you're allowed to eat from a shechita? That's talking about where the man says, listen, I shechted, and I'm telling you, I did not feel in the least bit faint, and I don't have a problem with that. So then, b'diavad, even if you don't know, you can rely on him to say that I didn't feel faint. But a chereshayt of a katan, it wouldn't help. A fila diavad namilo, because it's shema yeshu, shema yedersu, shema yachalidu, and it'll look like a good shchita. But if people were watching and they saw that there was no shiyah, no drisa, no chaloda, so then kulam sheshachatu, it would be kosher if achem roinotam. But what's the word v'chulam referring to? Hey, ilema chereshayt of a katan alokoi. So then it should say ve'im shachatu, if it's referring back to the opening of the Mishnah, which is referring to the muhzakim, and you're telling me in a case where he wasn't a muhzak in front of us, you told me before that even in that case, if the guy says, listen, I'm telling you, I have no problem with feeling faint at the sight of blood or cutting, so then that would be enough. Why do we need other people looking at it? Babori lisage. So how does Ravina the second, how does he explain the vekulam sheshachatu? In a case to let the kamandelish ayale, the guy isn't here, And therefore, we have to explain, well, what do we do if we don't have that option of asking him? So we're saying, well, other people can see whether, in fact, he felt faint. If he did, there would have been a shehiya. That would be the problem. They testified to the fact that there was no shehiya. All right, so now we've got our opening pshat, the brilliant pshat of Rabba Bar Ula. Then we've got these other pshatim, Abaya's pshat, which is really brilliant, except it doesn't cover all of the cases, because it fails when we're talking about the v'chulam. He doesn't have a good explanation to the v'chulam. So we've got that case. And then we've got Rava's modification of Abaya's case, which says it's enough if the mashgiach is coming in and out. But that's also not a very good explanation, because it too fails in explaining the v'chulam. And we've got Rav Ashi's case, but Rav Ashi also failed to explain the v'chulam. So really, we've only got Ravina's two possible cases and Rabba Bar Ula's that explain the Mishnah in its entirety. So let's take a look and see why we have the machlokas between them. It's obvious why Ravina and Rabba Bar Ula did not want to say Abaya's pshat, Rava's pshat, Rav Ashi's pshat, because none of them explained the v'chulu. So we're not going to go ahead and take an explanation which doesn't explain everything. So why would I say the pshat of them if I have a better pshat? Of course, we have to ask, but why didn't they say the pshat which was a better pshat? That we'll talk about in a moment. So why wouldn't Abaye, Rava, and Rav Ashi, why wouldn't they say Rabba Bar Ula's pshat? It's so elegant. It's so lovely. It's such a great way to explain the Mishnah. You've got to understand why anyone in his right mind wouldn't immediately say, wow, that's brilliant, and instead give some crummy pshat which doesn't explain the whole thing. I'll tell you why. Because Kulu Kirabba Bar Ula Lo Amri, the reason they didn't want to say his pshat is because since his pshat had to come up with a reason of why we're saying a halacha that already appeared in Shchitas Kachim, namely Besechet Zvachim, there were two possibilities, right? Both of those possibilities might not be applicable. Because if Rabba Bar Ula was referring to correctly the Lashon that said, actually, the Mishnah here in Chulin is the ikur place for the dinim of Shechita. And in Shechitas Kachim, namely Mesechet Zvachim, it only mentioned it agav, because it was talking about the other psulim for Kadesh. I'm not going to buy into that, because I don't believe it. I believe that actually Hasam ikur, the real place for talking about these dinim of Shechita, is This sugya in Kachim. And why are we talking about this here over here in Masechet Chulin? And if Rabba Bar Ula actually was saying, L'hachlisha de'amrit, the main place to discuss it is actually in Zvachim, and the only reason we're talking about it over here is because since we mentioned the dinim of Tuma on Chulin Shenasu al Tiras HaKadesh, we already mentioned the din of Tuma by Kadesh, Taninami Tami B'Makdashim, that is a terrible explanation, because we don't believe in the din of telling us a case of Tuma B'Chulin. We believe that Tame B'Chulin Gufe is ridiculous, because we hold that Chulin Shenazu Ataras HaKadosh Lav K'Kadosh Tama. So what are we talking about? If you want to shecht Chulin Betuma, what the heck? There is no din of Chulin Betuma. So therefore, according to Ravina, and according to Abaye, and according to Rava, and according to Ravashi, there's no problem over here, no possibility over here to say that, so they're sort of desperate. So they end up saying the case that they said, even though they can't explain the Chulin. Now, why didn't anybody like Ravina's case? I mean, either Ravina 1 or Ravina 2. So that, I mean, it did have an explanation for the all three elements. I'll tell you why. Kulo k'Ravina lo amri. So according to the first Lashon of Ravina 1, So you said the question is you got to make sure that this guy is really a mumcha and that he can pass a bechina. So this is the recently established Gavi Klal, the sparks are still flying, that Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shchita Mumchinein. You'll notice that Gavi has stopped carrying around his wand. He thinks he already has written down everything. No. There's lots to come, Mr. Gavi, and there's going to be all of this chulin, and you're going to have to do becheres, you're going to have to do erech, and you have to need it. Do you imagine how many things you carry around your wand at all times? Vigilance, that's what's important. Constant vigilance. Okay, so therefore we don't have a problem because of the Gavi Klal that Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shchita are Mumchinein. So if he's ready to drive around in Reb Alter Shachtos on wheels, then we assume that he is actually, we have a right to assume that he's a Mumcha. We do not need to test him. According to Ravina 2, basically, they say, what are you worried about? I mean, how many people are going to feel faint in the middle of cutting galal lufe lo chashina? It's not a serious problem. And because of that, if the person essentially, he learned the dinim and he's been involved in shchita, and because of that, we assume that he's already gone through it a few times, and we don't have to worry. It doesn't mean that he's never shechted before. Then, ein hachinami. We're not going to allow a person who never shechted before, just because he knows the halacha, and to call him a shechet. He has to shecht, as we paskin in Hilchos Shchita, he has to shecht in front of a Talmud Chacham, who is the Rav of the city, or the person who is the dayan who can give him a ksav for the Shchita. He has to shecht a number of times in front of such a person, and that establishes him as a shechet. So basically, because of that, we insist nowadays, halacha lemaisa, that we want to see that type of ksav from the dayan or from the Rav Ha'ir, and we're not going to assume that he is okay, even if la lufe lo chashina, that doesn't mean under any circumstances. It means once he shechted before. Okay, so now we understand why, actually, Ravina, Rabbi Barula, don't hold of the three possibilities that are not absolutely conclusive about all three dinim in the Mishnah. Abaye, Rava, and Ravashi. But why do Abaye, Rava, and Ravashi, you all end up with the same problem, namely that they don't have a full explanation of the Mishnah, why don't they say like each other? I mean, like, what's the point of saying these three different approaches? Well, we know why Rava doesn't like Abaye's pshat, because he said why he doesn't like Abaye's pshat. Hey, Abaye, you said if a Jew is coming in and out, that's not enough? How come it says beferish in the Masechet Avodah Zarah that if the Mashgiach is coming in and out, that that's enough, that the Yayin should be kosher? So he said what he doesn't like about that. Then that's clear. Rava doesn't like Abaye's pshat. Kikushe told us. The Mishnah says it's enough for a guy to come in and out. Abaye, why doesn't Abaye agree with Rava? Doesn't it say that the Mashgiach can come in and out? Yes, says Abaye, Mashgiach can come in and out if there's a goy in the store, you know? So then he's going to catch the goy if the goy comes to the place where the wine is. So there the goy is afraid. But over here, the goy is holding the animal. I don't, the person who is next shot is holding the animal, the kuti. So obviously, if he's holding it, he could have messed it up in one half of a second. What good is walking in and out? He's not afraid that he's going to be caught. So hatam lo naga, but over here the kuti is actually touching the very thing. I mean, what good is it for him? He knows he's got a tenth of a second, doesn't he? So if the guy didn't see him, what's the problem? Okay, so therefore, I'm not impressed with Rava's raya. Ravashi doesn't say, like Abaye or Rava, because he says, hey, you guys are talking about something ridiculous. A kuti is a goy. I hold kutim are gerei arayotein. And therefore, obviously he can't check, because a goy can't check. And therefore, why are we discussing whether he eats it, he doesn't eat it? The whole issue is moot. But why doesn't Abaye say like Rav Ashi? Well, remember, Rav Ashi was based on Rava's din, that a Jew who's not religious and he eats at McDonald's when he eats out, but he keeps kashrus when it's convenient, he doesn't hold that that guy can check. He doesn't hold of Rava's pshat. That was Rava who said, if you check the knife, you can give a Yisrael Mumer a kosher knife and assume that he does a decent job on the shechita. Okay, but why didn't Rava say his own pshat? Why do we need Rav Ashi to invoke Rava's din of the Yisrael Mumer? And when Rava came to say a pshat, he said the pshat of the Kuti like Abaye. How do you explain that? What's the matter with you? Rava doesn't believe that pshat. Rava was just telling Abaye, listen here, Abaye, I have a perfectly good pshat in this sugya, okay? So don't talk to me. But your pshat is ridiculous because you said it's not enough to have a mashgiach coming in and out. It's enough to have a mashgiach coming in and out. Here's what you should have said. I didn't say that I believe that's the pshat. I said that I believe that you should have said that that's the pshat. I myself, I'm perfectly happy. So Rava Lidvorov de Abaye Kamalei, Lelo Svirle, he doesn't hold of Abaye's pshat with the alternative of the Kuti. He thinks it's talking about a simple case of a Yisrael Mumer where you checked the knife. And therefore, everything should be perfectly all right on that level. Well, okay, beautiful. So now we essentially have all of our possible pirushim, and the only reason it turns out that we would possibly reject the beautiful approach of our very beginning was if you hold that there's no such thing as a chulin Shanasu al Taras HaKadosh, and obviously that would be one reason. There's one additional reason, which is that you don't believe that we would repeat the halacha if it was already said in its main area. And if you hold the main areas in Dizvachim, but that shows you that the two different approaches that we had over there, they're not random approaches. It's not like, well, if you like, you could say this, ibay tema this, ibay tema that. Ibay tema doesn't mean randomly you can say what you want. It is that if you actually believe that Zvachim is the ikker place, then ibay tema, you'll have to explain why it's said here. If you hold that, but you can't just pick and choose where it's convenient. That's what this whole sugya is based on. So if I don't believe this ibay tema, so I can't say it. That's what I mean. If you want to, it means if this is actually consistent with your approach. Anyway, we now have, once again, we have essentially three possible pshatim in the Mishnah, Ravina 1, Ravina 2, and then our opening pshat of the Rabbah Bar Ula, which was our preferred pshat. We've raised so many wonderful issues in the context of exploring just these first two dafim. We've learned about all five elements of Shechita, and we've learned about the machlokas, about whether kutim are geirei arayot or whether they're geirei emet. We've learned about a question about if a Yisrael who prefers to eat kosher, is he relied upon if it works out comfortably for him, to actually shecht, which was Rava's idea. We've learned about whether the ikar makom of the dinim of shechita is in shechitas kachim, or whether the ikar makom is in shechitas chulin, which is our mesechet. And we've learned about a machlokes of what the din is about chulin shenasu al taras hakodesh, and whether that actually becomes a chiyev to be nizhar. Meanwhile, we also talked about the dinim of chibas hakodesh. We just spoke about that. We've talked about the dinim of whether an animal that's mifar cheset is considered to be alive in terms of dinim of tumah. We've talked about the din of ha'amod of ha'arocha. Heck, it's been a busy, busy couple of days. And so I'm assuming that you'll be spending the rest of the day doing chazorah. So wishing you a happy chazorah, and we'll tune in tomorrow. Bezrat Hashem. Not at the same station, because we hope to be closer to the Beis HaMikdash, but probably the same Gemara, unless Elio already got busy slugging people up and answering the takus and so on. But probably the first day we can reliably do the next stuff. See you all. Bezrat Hashem. Kol Tov, and have a wonderful day.